The message this morning, Tina made a little slide for me that I wanted to put up. Phil? No. There we go. That's what I was trying to show you last week. Let's see. In verse 48, you can see. As many as had been appointed to eternal life believed. That word appointed, again, as I said last week, that is what gets people off so much. And the word that is used there, that is translated appointed, tetagamoinai, it comes from tasso, it's a perfect participle, nom to plural, masculine. It means to set in order, that's true. It means to appoint, it means to designate or determine. But, as I said last week, in the Greek, there's three voices. Active, middle, and passive. And usually in the perfect participle, only found in the perfect participle. Now, in participles, as I said last week, the manoi there, at the end of it, what we call the ending of the Greek word. In the participle, it's hard to determine what the voice is. Sometimes it's even hard to determine what the tense is. Because though that ending is found in so many participles. But unless you look at the context, you cannot tell what it is. And that's what they often forget, the context. And so, as I said, the active voice is the subject, it's him or herself performing the action indicated by the verb. The middle voice and the perfect participle never has the active voice. That's something to take note of as well. It either has a middle or passive voice. The passive voice means the subject is being acted upon. That someone is doing the acting upon the other one. So in this case, most scholars and theologians in that, and that's the way our Bibles often are translated, unfortunately, say that that verse is in the passive voice. But they ignore the context. If you look at the context, it's clear that the voice is the middle voice, where the subject participates in the result of the action or acts upon him or herself, for him or herself, or in one's own interest. In other words, what Acts 13:48 says is, as many as had determined, as many as had determined to eternal life, as many as had determined to believe, had eternal life. In other words, it was their choice. That's what that is saying. It was their choice. Not God. Not God saying that they were. But their choice. God gave them that choice. We see that in verse 46, like I said last week as well, earlier, with the Jews. It's what Paul and Barnabas said. Said, you reject it. So therefore, returning to the Gentiles. And the Gentiles rejoiced. Why? Because they determined. To believe what Paul and Barnabas were saying. They determined to believe the gospel. That's what I was wanted to show you with that. So we can take that off now. And then, more to be done. That's where we're at this morning. And I had Carson make a map for us so that you can see Paul's missionary journey, Paul and Barnabas. Everyone see that? Now, what they do in the first missionary journey, they come from Antioch of Syria. They come down to Seleucia. We want to always look at, when we see a C in that, we always, for some reason, we want to always pronounce that as a soft. And we want to say Seleucid or Seleucia. But remember, the names of these towns, the names of these places and that, is in Greek. In Greek, the way you would pronounce that is Seleucia. There's a, what we call a kappa there, and it's, so it's a hard K, not a soft K. So they move from Antioch of Syria, their home base. They move from Antioch of Syria to Seleucia, and they take a ship at the beginning of their journey. And they take a ship from Seleucia to Salamis. That journey there from Seleucia to Salamis is 300 miles. 300 miles they are traveling. This is where they ended up. And then they go from there to Paphos. At Paphos, that's where they encounter the Jew who Paul blinded. And where we have the proconsul, Sergius, who becomes a believer. After spending a little bit of some time there, they move from there. They take another ship. They move from there to Paphos, and they go to Perga. At Perga, we notice that they don't, nothing said about, no success there. So from Perga, they walk over 100 miles. Can you imagine that? It probably took them a while to get that. They had to go over the Tarsus Mountains. They walk over 100 miles to Pisidian Antioch. And at Pisidian Antioch, as we saw last week, that's what we bring up with when where Paul said he turned to the Gentiles. And they stayed there for a while. So after their success, and we could say opposition, to in Pisidian Antioch, Paul and Barnabas, notice this, Paul and Barnabas, they don't quit all of a sudden. Remember, they shake the dust off their feet in that town, and they leave. They say they turn to the Gentiles, they take the dust off, because they're practically chased out of town. So they literally do, they take their sandals off, or whatever type of shoes that they were wearing, probably sandals, they take those off, and they literally, as I said, that's a high insult to the Jewish people, by the way. And they literally shake the dust off their feet as they're going out. But they notice this, though. They don't all of a sudden go back to Perga, take a ship, sail back home. They don't do that. They don't quit and go home. They don't say, oh, what's the use? Oh, we got to, you know, that doesn't say how many believe. They didn't do that. What did they do? They continued on. They journeyed on. There's more to be done here. They know that they were commissioned. They were given a mission to proclaim the gospel. Now, as we look further into the text of chapter 14, we're going to discover that Paul and Barnabas travel to three more cities. And we're going to find some interesting things happen that we can learn from and apply to our lives today as well. So let's look at the first city. I think Tina prepared a slide for that. There we go. This is the basic outline of the message today. Probably won't get to all of that. They go to Iconium. Again, that C. Do not say Isonium. It's a hard C. Kappa. They go to Iconium. Again, they walk over 60 miles from Pisidian Antioch to Iconium. That's where we're at with these verses this morning. If you look back at chapter 13, verse 51, what we find there is they shook off the dust of their feet against them, and they went to Iconium. This city was in the region of Phrygia. Phrygia, and the Y there is not pronounced like a Y. It's in the Greek, it's an upsilon, so it's phu. It's just like this. This is Pamphylia. And Cilicia. So they go to that area. It's another. Now notice this. It's on the border between Phrygia and Lucania. It's on the border of that. Again, Paul gives us here and Barnabas what they do. Again, as I said, it's about 60 miles southeast of Pisidian Antioch. There's several Roman roads that met at that point. This again, these three cities that they went to, they're not just any cities. They're major cities. Paul and Barnabas, they thought things out. They know about these cities. Not some of these cities they've never been to, but they're major cities. Iconium is a major city. It's an important city of the day. Now, it's also, and it's part of Lucania, but it's also part of the region that was known as South Galatia, what became Galatia in New Testament time. Where's the first place they go? Look at the verses now. In Iconium, they enter the synagogue. See that? Why? I thought they turned to the Gentiles. But we have to remember that was in Pisidian Antioch, that the Jews rejected it, so they turned to the Gentiles. But notice, every place that they go, if there's a synagogue, they go to the Jews first. So notice this. In Iconium, they entered the synagogue of the Jews together and spoke in such a manner, notice this, and spoke in such a manner that a large number of people believed, both of Jews and of Greeks. Now, the Greek word that is used there is ethne, which means the Gentiles, people who are not Jews. But the Jews, notice this, but the Jews who disbelieved stirred up the minds of the Gentiles and embittered them against the brethren. That's against Paul and Barnabas. But it's not just Paul and Barnabas. They also embittered them against those who believed, those who became Christians. Therefore, they spent a long time speaking boldly with reliance upon the Lord, boldly upon the Lord, who was testifying to the word of his grace, granting that signs and wonders be done by their hands. But the people of the city were divided, and some sided with the Jews, and some with the apostles, Paul and Barnabas. And when an attempt was made by both the Gentiles and the Jews with the rulers to mistreat, now notice this, to mistreat and to stone them, they heard about it. They became aware of it. And it says they fled to the cities of Lucania. Of Lucania, although this is not shown here. They fled to the city, the area of Lucania. What's that mean? Lystra, this again, not the list, it's Lystra. Lystra and Derbe. And the surrounding region. That's the surrounding region of Lucania. And there they continued to preach the gospel. So they were driven out of this place they walked 60 miles to Iconium. So they left there. Notice that even though the Jews rejected them in Pisidia and Antioch, they do not neglect the Jews in Iconium. They go to the synagogue first. The Jews are offered the gospel first. Now, when it says Gentiles there or Greeks there, those could be Gentile proselytes of the gate there as well. But they did that because it might lead them to other Gentiles. And it evidently did. So a great number of people, doesn't tell us how many, but a great number of people accepted the gospel. But notice this. At Pisidia and Antioch, they faced opposition. So they shook the dust off their feet and left. At Iconium, they faced opposition from the Jews. And then they stir up some of the Gentiles. So they face opposition once again. Now the word which is translated disbelieved there, literally, what that means is disobeyed. It's like Brother Garrett 3 says, it's the distinguishing feature of nearly all the persecutions recorded in Acts. Guess who they were instigated by? They were instigated by unbelieving Jews. In almost every place they went. It says they were embittered them against the brethren. In other words, these Jews were exasperated that there were now Christian believers, both Jew and Gentile, in Iconium. They didn't like that. Now notice in verse 3 what Paul and Barnabas do. They don't just leave because there's opposition. In fact, the text tells us they spent a long time in Iconium. It could have been a month. It could have been several months or longer. But opposition did not keep them from proclaiming the gospel and doing what they were called to do. It says they continued to boldly preach the gospel. And the Greek text suggests to us here, brothers and sisters, that the Lord was their support. They relied upon the Lord. And the Lord granted their request to work miracles. For what purpose? Just to do the miracles? Just so people could say, oh, look how great these guys are. Look what they've done. No. It was to validate the message that they preached. That's why God allowed that. But notice they continued to boldly preach the gospel. As Brother Don DeWelt said, it is of real interest to note that each time miracles mentioned, they are associated with the hands of either the apostles or those upon whom the apostles had laid their hands.
Never do we hear the Christians of these towns working miracles through their great faith. But what happened? It led to a division in the city among the people. Can you think about that today? Can you apply that to today? Some went along with the disbelieving Jews. Others accepted Paul and Barnabas. Opposition? Some went this way and some went that way. Don't we see that happening today? Did you see how Paul and Barnabas handled that? They didn't just give up. They still boldly proclaimed the gospel. Regardless of some people saying, okay, I'm going to go this way. Well, I'm going to go that way. I believe these people. Or I believe these people. That didn't stop Paul and Barnabas. Same thing with us. It cannot stop us from proclaiming the gospel and to telling others. So that led to that division. So what did they do? They become aware of what they wanted to do. They wanted to stone them. Mistreat means they wanted to harm them. They wanted to perpetrate violence against Paul and Barnabas. And then stone them. Imagine that, see? You're treated violently, maybe beaten up and that, and then they stone you. That's what the Jews wanted to do. They hear about it, and so they leave. And they go to the area, the cities, of Lycaonia. Now, this is one of the provinces of Asia Minor in pre-Roman times. It was made a part of the region of South Galatia. So now in verses 8 through 20, what we find, we won't get to all of it today, and what happened there, is they go from there to Lystra. Lystra is another major city. But here's an interesting thing that we read about. It's another major city of the region. It's about, you can't really see it from here, but it's about 40 miles to Lystra. They walk again. They walk from Iconium to Lystra, about 40 miles. And after that, we're going to see that they go to Derbe. But in all of these places, Paul and Barnabas preached the gospel. Now let us specifically see what occurred in Lystra. We won't get to all of it today. Paul and Barnabas would go to areas if there was not a synagogue. And notice this now. There must not have been a synagogue there. There must not have been Jewish people there to establish a synagogue. Because notice what happens. At Lystra, a man was sitting who had no strength in his feet, lame from his mother's womb, who had never walked. This man was listening to Paul, and the word there means listening. It means that it's in the present tense, and it means continuous. He was really concentrating. He was continually listening to what Paul had to say. This man was listening to Paul as he spoke, when he had fixed his gaze on him, he's looking right at this man, and had seen that he had faith, Paul did, he saw that this man had faith to be made well. Paul says with a loud voice, "Stand upright on your feet." And he leaped up, and he began to walk. Not 3 days later, or a few minutes later, or a few hours later, or a month later, as some of these so-called faith healers wanted to say happened. Immediately, he stood upright and he began to walk. When the crowd saw what Paul had done, they raised their voice. He was lame from, they knew it all. They knew he was lame from his mother's womb, from his birth. Now he can walk. And these are Gentiles now. Lycaonians, Lystrians. No Jews, not Jewish people. Notice. When the crowd saw what Paul had done, they raised their voice, saying in the Lycaonian language, "The gods have become like men and have come down to us." And they began calling Barnabas Zeus and Paul Hermes because he was the chief speaker. And the priest of Zeus, whose temple was just outside the city, brought oxen and garlands to the gates and wanted to offer sacrifice with the crowds. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of it, they tore their robes, literally, the outside of their robes. And they rushed out into the crowd, crying out, saying, "Men, why are you doing these things? Men, why are you doing these things? We are also men of the same nature as you, and preach the gospel to you, the good news, that you should turn from these vain things to a living God who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and that all that is in them." Now what we notice here is this. Paul and Barnabas, when there's no synagogue there, they would go to the areas where people would generally meet. The marketplaces, principally in the public forums. Now, in one of these places, Paul and Barnabas come upon a lame man, and we notice what happens here. And that has an immediate impact upon the crowd. Can you imagine yourself there? It has an immediate impact on the crowd of people, and they proclaim Paul and Barnabas. Gods. They say Paul is Hermes. That's probably because he's doing the majority of the speaking. The messenger of Zeus. So they proclaim him Hermes and Barnabas Zeus, the chief god. It's interesting here. Brother Gareth Reese brings this out. And we'll just get to this part this morning. And we'll pick it up next week with part two. There was a fable, a myth, among the inhabitants of Lycaonia, that region, that Jupiter, Zeus, and Mercury, Hermes, had once visited Lystra. The chief god, Zeus, and his son, Mercury, Hermes, had visited. And according to their mythology, they visited this place, Lystra, and they were received by an elderly couple. They took the form of men, what they said, and they came to Lystra to visit. They walked up and down the streets, knocking on the doors. This is what they believed. But no one invited them in to visit. But finally they came to a house in town that was a tumble-down shack at the edge of the city dump, the home of an elderly couple. And they invited Jupiter and Mercury in to visit a while. And they gave them food and stuff in the shade of an old tree. And then they were invited to stay for a feast. Well, late at night, they left the city, the myth says, and they took with them this elderly couple. But when they were at a safe distance, Jupiter, Zeus, called fire down upon the town. And all those who had refused Jupiter, Zeus, and Hermes, Mercury, they were put to death. because they wouldn't honor the gods. So Jupiter and Zeus, Jupiter and Mercury, Zeus and Hermes, they made this elderly couple priest to them. And they built a new city, Lystra. And a magnificent temple was built. And in this temple, this elderly couple served. And ever after that, when a stranger would come to town, they made sure he was well received. So now along comes Paul and Barnabas. That's one of the reasons they made ready to sacrifice to Paul and Barnabas. They didn't want their city destroyed. They didn't want anything to happen to their city. So that's what they do. Now notice here, Paul and Barnabas finally understand what's going on. What do? They tear their garments to signify their dismay in it. And then they say, "Men, quit, stop it. We're just like you." See, these people were not about to make the same mistake. The same mistake this time. So they were going to honor Paul and Barnabas. You see their worldview? So Paul begins to preach to them. Notice what he says in our text. What is Paul's argument here? Notice what he says. It's a lesson in here for us. He says, "You should turn from these vain things," what they're worshiping, what they're striving to do, "to a living God who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and all that is in them." See what Paul is doing? Notice here that right now Jesus is not even mentioned. The first thing Paul does, he establishes common ground with these people. He mentions them about a creator, about God. And then he says, "In the generations gone by, he permitted all the nations," that meaning you, "to go their own ways. And yet, he did not leave himself without witness, in that he did good and gave you rain from heaven and fruitful season, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness. Saying these things, with difficulty they restrained." The people still wanted to worship them. "They restrained the crowd from offering sacrifice to them." We're going to stop there this morning. So I want you to see what Paul is saying here. He begins with an argument from creation. He uses three present tense participles in verse 17 concerning God. He wants them to know that there is a God, and there's only one God, and yes, he is a living God. And he's the one that provides the rains and the things for you. And that he let you go your own way. But not now. Paul turns to an argument regarding providence. Paul tells them to turn away from their idolatrous ways. What is Paul doing here? It's what he's doing what many people don't want done today. Paul confronts them with the truth. See, they believe in these mythical gods that they never seen. But they believe that they did visit them and even destroyed their town because they neglected to offer them hospitality. But Paul confronts them with the truth that there is a God. There is a creator. What's the lesson in that for us? And this is what people don't get today. There is no such thing as a spiritual vacuum. No such thing as a spiritual vacuum. That's what Paul was telling them. what Paul was saying when he said, "And yet he did not leave himself without witness, and that he did good and gave you rain from heaven and fruitful season, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness." But they still wanted to offer sacrifice to them, and they had a hard time restraining them. But Paul was trying to tell them, you believe in these mythical gods. But he was in essence saying, there's no such thing as a spiritual vacuum. There is God. And see, many people today, unlike these Gentiles, or I should say, much like these Gentiles, believe in a spiritual vacuum. There is no such thing as a spiritual vacuum. People are going to fill it with one or the other. That's why Paul tells us that we're fighting a spiritual battle, that we're in a spiritual warfare. Because there is that no spiritual vacuum. There's Yahweh's, there's God's side, and there's Satan's side and his minions. No spiritual vacuum. As much as what people want to say that there is. So I leave you with this. Because many think that there is. How would you explain the gospel to people who do not understand or know the Bible? What did you start with? How would you explain it to them? See, that's what Paul was doing. Paul was getting at them the truth, explaining the gospel in such a way that they would understand. And we're going to see next week that indeed that they do. Some of them do. But again, we're going to see that there are those who oppose Paul and Barnabas. And we're going to see where they come from next week. But that really gives us something to think about. How do you explain the gospel to someone who has no idea about the Bible? Where do you start with? How do you establish common ground with them? That's what we've got to begin to think about. That's what we have to do when we have people approach us who don't know anything about the Bible. Where do you begin with them? See? Paul gives us an example and how we can do that. Let's stand. We're going to sing, "Lord, I'm Coming Home." See, that's what Paul wanted those people to do. He wanted them to come home to God. He's the only God there is. Many of them would, but many of them wouldn't, as we're going to see. So many people have done that, and God wants them to come home. He's given us the wherewithal to help them to come home.